You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome, everyone, to Breaking Big Blue. I'm your host, Jordan Ron, on ESPN. ESPN.com Giants reporter, the off-season commences episode right here. Can we have a busier time of the year? Joe Judge fired. Dave Gettleman retired. GM search in progress. Head coaching search on the horizon. Let's go. So much to talk about. I mean, the end of the Giants season was a mess, and ultimately, that's what got Joe Judge fired, because he was going to stay. The Giants wanted to keep Joe Judge, but things continued to go off the rails. There was the 11-minute ramble. I think I mentioned this last week. That 11-minute ramble in Washington, I got a text not long after that, a day or two after that, from somebody who said who speaks to a lot of people in the organization, said he was safe. I can't say that anymore. Now he could be in trouble. And then the QB sneaks in the finale, even though it necessarily tactically wasn't probably the worst, wasn't even the wrong decision, but optically it was bad. And then, so people who didn't see the first down pass when Jake Fromm couldn't complete, you know, a 2-yard pass to fullback Eli Penny in the flat and threw it, you know, 3 yards short of him, you say, oh, the Giants are giving up. Well, their best chance to win at that point is to win like 9-6 or something stupid like that anyway. But the problem lies in the fact that you're at the point where all you can't even function and go back and throw a pass like a normal NFL team. So then you become a joke. And when you become a punchline, it starts making its rounds. And from that point, ownership hears it. And once ownership hears, I say this all the time, coaches get fired when the fans and the outside noise is so loud that ownership can't justify moving forward with the coach any longer. And that's kind of what happened here. Now, we'll get to John Mara's comments in a little bit. We have Mike Tannenbaum to talk about the GM search and the coaching search on the horizon. He has a little inside info kind of about how these things work. So I thought it's very interesting to talk to him. So we'll get to that in a few minutes. We'll get to John Mara's takeaways, and we'll finish up with Joe Judge here and then get into the GM search a little bit. But the Joe Judge thing, it had sort of reached a boiling point where ownership just thought, hey, we're hiring a new GM. We can't go forward. And now there's GM candidates who really don't want to, who wouldn't want to be paired with him. So in order to have an actual clean process, a good process of hiring a general manager, which they even admitted they didn't do last time. I sit here and in my words, I'll tell you, it was a sham, an absolute sham when they hired Dave Gettleman. Everybody knows it. Everybody who stood there and watched that knows it was a sham. And because they're not aligned, that's part of the reason Joe Judge is gone. Because they're not aligned now. He wasn't aligned with the general manager. The Giants are then sitting there. Now they need a new general manager. Can they really force the coach onto the general manager? And they said, okay, we have to do this at the same time, which is the right way to do it. You have to align the two. And it made Joe Judge sort of a victim of the situation here. Now, did he do plenty to hurt himself? Absolutely. But he got stuck with the worst general manager, one of the worst general managers of this generation. The results tell you that, right? And he wasn't aligned with him. So because of that, now 2 years later, he's kind of stuck in a hard rock between the Giants are stuck between a rock and a hard place. And they say, shoot, we now have to align them both. And who's the victim of that? The head coach. Like I said, Joe Judge did plenty to hurt himself. At the same time, I think the mob mentality part of it is an interesting thing going on here. And I understand it because people are just mad. They're mad with the Giants. They're mad at everything. But last year, 6-10, they're in it till the final week of the season. 6-10, not great. We know that. Not good, actually. We know that. But how many people that were sitting there at 6-10 were praising Joe Judge? And then all of a sudden, 1 year later in each season, that admittedly just fell apart. He's dealing with nothing at the end of the season. All of a sudden, just needed to cut his head off. We're done with him. A lot. And it's the mob mentality that the Giants fans have right now because they're sick of losing and they can't sit there and they don't want to sit there and don't want to be told to have patience, which is fair. Because how much longer do they have to wait for their team to get it right and win? And the only way to stop the mob mentality is one thing, is to win. So unless this next coach comes in and has success in basically 2 years, we're going to end up in probably a similar situation again. Unless you go like 8-8 or something, you at least be decent. But if you're bad and you lose, the mob mentality is going to get them again. Because the fan base is irate with this franchise. And it starts at the top. It rots starting from the top, at the head. And that's John Mara. And that's ownership. So, with that being said, let's talk about John Mara. He had a Zoom press conference. Okay. Wasn't carried live on any radio or TV. The Giants didn't want it there. Maybe because it was on Zoom and there could be some difficulties. I mean, not every Zoom, trust me, has run smoothly this year. In regards to people with internet problems. Maybe the questions could have gotten harsh. Who knows? But anyway, the Giants decided we're going to put this on delay, at least. So maybe these things could be edited out. Who knows? Maybe somebody sneaks onto a Zoom. It's not out of the question. I know there are people that are trying to, that want to sneak onto these Zooms. Trust me. Fact. So anyway, John Mara speaks. And I got 4 main takeaways from what he said. Okay, number one is he's embarrassed. He said as much. He's never been this embarrassed with his franchise. And I believe him. Trust me, John Mara cares. That's not one thing I would say about the Giants organization. Oh, they're not trying to win. They don't care. No, they legit. John Mara legit cares. This is his primary job. This is his only real job, to run the Giants. It's been his job most of his life. He's been involved in this organization. It's his pride and joy. It's his baby. Trust me, he cares. So I believe him on this. That's true. But we'll get to number 4 in a minute. You'll see. This is part of the problem. Maybe he cares a little bit too much, that he can't detach himself. Number 2 is they botched the GM search last time. I kind of mentioned this before. The word John Mara used was rushed. Made that mistake in the past. Yes. The last GM search was a sham. The Giants wanted to stay within their little family, in their little comfort zone. And what'd they do? They hired Dave Gettleman, who, by the way, was run out of Carolina, made a ton of enemies on the way. Didn't matter. And by the way, Dave Gettleman made a Super Bowl, but he did it with what? The key players on that team, most of the building blocks on that team came from the previous GM. So if the Giants maybe did their research and looked hard enough, they would have realized that wasn't the right choice. And to stay within the family was not the right choice because it was time for change. No, they were reluctant to change because this organization, by the way, is consistently reluctant to change. Now they seem open to it. And like John Mara said, hey, he has to earn back the trust. Why am I going to sit here and 100% fully believe, oh yeah, sure, the Giants are going to let the new GM come in, hire the new coach, which they say they will, right? And give him full control of that coaching search and full autonomy of the organization, and the coach and the head coach are going to be able to run it until I see it, until I'm able to find out, I hear details about it. Sorry, I have reason to doubt that they're fully, truly open to 100% change. Now, last time they sat there and they sold us change, we all knew it was bogus. I mean, Dave Gettleman, for God's sakes, called the analytics department, the computer guys. Okay, how the heck am I supposed to take that seriously? As for Joe Judge, this is number 3 of the Mara takeaways. Judge was fired in large part because of this GM search. Because, like, granted, they weren't happy with what happened this season. It was a total mess. The Giants, and Mara said, they still believe that there's a good head coach in Joe Judge. He was a 38-year-old, first-time hire. They believe in him, but everything that went on around him and with him and his words and the way he kind of imploded late in the season made it untenable to bring him back because they now have to go hire a general manager. And this is a quote from John Mara. We have to give that person the flexibility to bring in the head coach he wants, which is encouraging. Encouraging. Now, again, I'll believe it when I see it. Because with the Giants right now, worst team in the NFL tied with the Jets since 2017. Until I see it, I don't believe it. You gonna see me picking them to have a winning record? Nah. Did it this year. How stupid do I look? Dumber than usual. And then takeaway number four. All in the family, right? Maybe a little too close to the situation. John Mara said got very sensitive when questions started coming about his family and personnel. Chris, who's at the, you know, his brother, who's at the top of the list, who I mentioned earlier this year, is, you know, he's not making the big decisions, but he's still giving his input. He's still giving player input, especially in the college draft. He's sitting there in the general manager interview, their nephew, Tim McDonald. He's a co-director of player personnel. He's high up on the list in personnel as well of the executives. Now, John Mara wants to pretend that they give their opinions and they're respected, which maybe they are respected. That's fine. Look, I only hear good things about Tim McDonald, for real. From people that have worked with him, from people around the league, I hear good things about Tim McDonald, consistently. But to sit there and think that when they say something or they give their opinion and they feel strongly about something, that then wouldn't potentially sway the general manager or head coach a little bit is asinine. Asinine. Tim McDonald, who's going to be running the team in 10 years, you think people, when he gives a strong opinion on something, it doesn't hold more clout than Mark Kahn's, who was, you know, another personnel director or whatever? Some executive in personnel. I mean, come on. We have to be realistic about this here. And I'm not saying the Giants should fire or get rid of Chris Mara or Tim McDonald, because look, that's the benefit of owning a business. Almost every big business has relatives working and on the payroll. And that's fine. Totally fine with that. But when you're losing and you're losing to this degree, it's only fair to sit back and evaluate everything, to be just to be sensitive and reluctant to even basically say, Tim and Chris, no, they're respected. We're not, what do you mean? What's wrong with them in their positions? Like, to not even question that and their roles and their influence? Come on, John. Come on. You're not being realistic here. You're not. As for the GM search, the names that I'm focusing on at this point that I probably heard the most about, and it doesn't mean they're going to get the job. Once you get in that interview room, I say this all the time, anybody can win the job in that interview room. Look at Joe Judge. Did anybody, not even people in the Giants organization, would have guessed that Joe Judge was going to end up being their head coach? Like, literally nobody in the Giants organization would have pegged that. But coming into the search, the names I've heard the most, I'll give you the three names I heard the most, another one that kind of really intrigues me, okay? You got Joe Shane, the Buffalo Bills assistant GM. Heard his interview. He impressed a lot of people in that interview. It occurred on Wednesday. Young, smart. I hear he's super smart, well-rounded. I mean, I've heard from people who worked with him in Miami and in Buffalo, and they've done nothing but say good things about Joe Shane and how smart he is. So he's a guy I'm looking at and saying, okay, this could be the next general manager of the Giants. I could see it. A guy whose name I heard weeks and weeks and weeks ago being discussed about within the Giants walls is Kansas City Chiefs executive Ryan Poles. He interviewed on Thursday afternoon. Really young, progressive. I think if Ryan Poles ends up being the general manager of the Giants, same with Joe Shane, and probably most of these guys that we're going to talk about, you're going to see major changes to the way this organization operates. And that's why the Giants, if you look at the candidates that they're interviewing, all of them really are coming from winning organizations, winning teams. The Ravens didn't make the playoffs this year, Joe Ortiz I'm talking about. But that's an organization that has done nothing but stable and win, especially in personnel. And so when these guys come in, whoever the new GM is that gets hired is, you're going to see them implement and integrate an entirely new system of how things work. And it's going to be based off primarily probably wherever they're coming from to a degree. And it's going to involve merging the front office and the head and the coaching staff more than ever before. Because the Giants, they've always liked to keep church and state separated. Personnel is on one side. Coaching is on the other. John Mara is sort of the mediator. He mediates if there's any real differences in opinion between the two. You're not going to see that anymore, which might be good because it's going to, in a way, push out some of the ownership influence. Now, do things need to be approved by ownership? Do they have input? Of course they do. Everywhere. Trust me, the Giants are not the only team with a lot of family involved. I believe the Chargers are one team that has a lot of family involved. Dallas is a team that obviously has family involved. So heavily involved, I'm talking about. Trust me, there's more out there. I would have to do more research into figuring out exactly who, but trust me, there's more out there. So Ryan Poles is a name that sticks out to me. Joe Hortiz, he comes from the Baltimore Ravens organization. Been there forever, I believe 20 plus years. And if you know the way that they've operated over there, they're considered one of the, and I know the Giants have been sort of infatuated with the way that that organization has been consistently good and operated. So to me, that makes Hortiz extremely interesting candidate. And the fourth guy that I haven't heard anything specifically about. So the first three, I've heard their names from people inside the organization. So to me, I'm looking at them near the top of the list. And the fourth is Adam Peters, just because you're talking about a guy who went in and was essentially John Lynch's right-hand man. And John Lynch, remember, no personnel background. And Denver, who was very well-respected and had a lot of success at the time, let Adam Peters go to San Francisco. So this is a guy who's had a ton of success, Super Bowl-style success, in organizations that have been consistently good. And look at the players that they've acquired in San Francisco since Adam Peters has been there. Now, we don't know. We never know who to attribute, to give credit for players, but Adam Peters is a name that intrigues me. Now, leadership and other characteristics are kind of essential. It's not just personnel. I don't think people should be too overly caught up in personnel when it comes to these guys, because we don't know who's really, you know, fighting for certain players and who picked who. You really never know that. Leadership. Mike Tannenbaum's gonna fill us in 1 minute. But first, let me just say one more thing before we get out of here. I didn't add this on Joe Judge. I want to say this because Joe Judge is going out and everybody's, you know, calling him a clown and wants him out. They're taking pictures of his house, TMZ. And I want to say this about him. I have never been part of a NFL situation, an individual, where I think the public perception and reality are of what that individual is like is so far apart. Joe Judge, from what I've gotten to know, from my relationship with him, is honest, straight up, like, good dude. Okay? This is my personal interactions with him and what I see. Super smart. You know, to think this guy's a buffoon, like, you're kidding yourself. Telling you. He's super smart and sharp. And you can tell, I'm telling you, in the middle of press conferences, he's able to think on his feet, answer super quick. His mind, his brain is working super fast. And if you're part of his inner circle and you're one of those people that he likes, I can tell. Like, he will go to the mat for you. You know, he's not going to lay you out. And he had plenty of opportunities this year. Think about it. He never laid any player out or said, put any player out there or left them out cold in the press. Even Isaiah Wilson, who was falling asleep in meetings, Joe Judge took the high road with that. He refused to dole out any of his players. Think he couldn't have dished on Saquon Barkley playing poorly at any point? You think he couldn't have said something about Mike Glennon or Jake Fromm? He did his best to protect every one of those players publicly. And he has a close stable of assistants. Again, super close with them. So I think the public perception versus reality on who Joe Judge is as a person, maybe he's not a good head football coach. Maybe he was over his head. I am certainly not going to argue those two right now, because it didn't turn out well for him. But the idea that he has no chance to be a coach again, that he's a bumbling fool, that he's a clown. I know you see all these clowns on social media. I think you're way off with that. Way off. Did he make mistakes? Absolutely. I don't think he intended to, crap on the Washington football team. But he got caught up in the heat of the moment, and he did. And he did. And he paid the price for it. That played a large part in him losing his job. But the idea that this guy's a clown and a bumbling fool, I'm sorry. I think the public perception versus reality on this one is more off than I've ever seen of a player or coach. And with that, let's move on to talk to Mike Tannenbaum. On to the next one.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, let's bring in Mike Tannenbaum, our resident ESPN general manager, to give us a little insight on, what a general manager search might be like and the overall state of the Giants. Mike, welcome. Thanks for coming on again.
Great, Jordan. Really appreciate you having me.
Yeah. You know what it's like to be a general manager in this league. You know what it's like to sit there in these general manager interviews that the Giants are doing right now. Give us a little insight. I want to know, what is a general manager interview like?
Well, it's interesting. I've been a GM. I've interviewed GMs. And the gist of it is you're hiring somebody who is obviously hugely consequentially important, but also they're not only your CEO, but they also have to have the ability to hire somebody that's even more important than them in a head coach. So you're looking for skills like organization, vision, leadership, but you're also looking for somebody that could be a servant and a great sort of partner to whomever the head coach is going to be. And the process to me is one in which you want to put them in behavioral-based interviews, questions. You want to put them in situations. Like one of the questions I would ask candidate, Jordan, would be, and to be candid, I've used a number of like performance psychologists, sports psychologists to help me formulate my approach. But one of the big questions I would ask a GM or a head coach is, tell me a time you've walked into a meeting and somebody was able to change your mind and what happened and why? Because the ability to have flexibility and to be a great listener is so consequential that if you don't have the ability to run a draft meeting and to walk in and say, boy, I really want to draft Jordan over Alex. Mm-hmm. And then the young West Coast area scout has great information about Alex and they change your mind. So you get the best decision, not the loudest decision, is so important to the health and ultimately the performance of your franchise. Those sort of questions are so important.
One thing you didn't say, and this is why I'm curious where it comes in. You didn't say, their talent evaluation ability. And I know that's a really subjective thing. It's really hard to figure out, right? I mean, you don't know who's the one that's actually evaluating. There's a lot of people in an organization. So where does that come in and how do you sort of measure that?
Yeah, and that's a huge part of it. And, I was fortunate to get, a couple of positions based on, I had a track record of guys that I signed off on, amplified. Right. But it's really more about the process. And what I mean by that is you need somebody who's a great talent evaluator, but I'm much more interested in somebody that can run the process because it's not about, hey, should we draft Josh Allen or Daniel Jones, or should we take Saquon Barkley second? It's much more about, this is a year-round process that we're going to spend millions of dollars. You're developing your staff. It's almost a different job than being a talent evaluator from a standpoint is you're scaling leadership. So I want to hear about your process. Tell me about your draft meetings. Who's in the room? What's the format? Who's driving it? Are they comfortable having disparate opinions? Those are much more important because if you're doing this for the next 10, 20 years, that's what's going to give you a sustainable organization. And I can tell you firsthand, I worked for Coach Parcells. I worked for Bill Belichick twice. As tough as they are, and they were tough, when I was 25, 26 years old, my opinion was valued. Now, you don't think I had to walk into those meetings airtight, good reports, good information about salary cap or a player? You bet, Jordan, I was nervous as heck. But they created an environment that if you were in that meeting room, your opinion was valued. You had to answer questions. And I'm much more interested in that than somebody that just went into Ole Miss and gave a first round pick, you know, to a tackle.
Right. How did you know your opinion was valued? Like, what were the keys to you that told you that they were listening? You know, it wasn't just, okay, we, you know, take it and absorb it and then just throw it out the window kind of deal.
Yeah. A couple of things. One, there would be repeated follow-up detailed questions, like with incredible attention to detail of why you like a player, what their background is, why should we sign this player? What games did you watch? Like, it was, no stone was ever left unturned. And then I could tell you that when there were small victories, they were celebrated and you felt like $1 million. And then the next minute, I mean, there was times, Jordan, I would walk into Coach Parcells' office at 5:15 in the morning because he was there at 5:20 with a note on his desk apologizing for a mistake. Like, he would bring you to your knees in tears. And then 24 hours later, you felt like you were going to run a franchise tomorrow because you were so smart because he would praise you. So there was no doubt that your opinion was valued. And if it wasn't well thought out and if it wasn't well researched, you weren't going to be in that room very often. So to me, I know from a fan perspective, you're going to say, well, okay, hey, who did this guy like or how good was his draft? And obviously that's part of the discussion. Mm-hmm. But when you're sitting at the top of the food chain, scaling leadership, holding people accountable, developing them, feeling like it's a great place to come to work and they have a chance to meaningfully impact, improve their career is so much more important.
So let's apply that kind of to the Giants job here for a second, right? You see the position they're in. They need a head coach. They need a new general manager. They've have the worst record in the league over the last 5 years as a franchise. They have a setup where, you know, it was talked about yesterday, but there are ownership in personnel. That's, they're not the only one in the league that has that. What do you look at as, okay, if I'm hiring somebody for the Giants as a general manager, what are the top priorities for you there?
I want somebody that has great football acumen, is a great leader, and has tremendous mental toughness and resiliency. And I will tell you this, Jordan, and I am 100% on the record with this. Hold me accountable to the statement. The New York Giants should win a lot of games immediately in 2022 and compete for the playoffs, if not this year, next year. And I will give you
I'll give you a
great history lesson. The 1996 New York Jets will set a record that no North American team sport will ever accomplish. The 96 Jets spent the most money in the NFL and won one game. And in 1997, right, Bill Parcells and Bill Belichick went to the Jets, hired a whole bunch of people, myself included. We won 9 games, and the next year we were in the championship game. And I learned firsthand that it's about the right people and it's about coaching and leadership. When Andy Reid went to Philadelphia, they knew they struck gold. And when he went to Kansas City, they got Alex Smith. They went to the playoffs. They got Patrick Mahomes. They're competing for championships. I knew we had a great coach in Rex Ryan when he walked off the field in training camp and said, I got to go call Eric Mangini because Eric Mangini did a heck of a job here. There's a great foundation. And with a rookie quarterback in 2009, we went to the championship game. So you get the right coach who doesn't make excuses, who doesn't blame anybody else, who has great leadership, great ability to inspire and develop others. There's enough good young pieces on that team that they should win games, a lot of games this year, compete for the playoffs, the latest next year.
So you think that the foundation has been laid there?
Yeah.
Sort of like Joe Judge was actually saying, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe Joe had the right message in sort of like the 11-minute speech obviously did not help him. But I think what he was intending to say made a lot of sense, Jordan. And if they get the right coach who's not going to talk about the prior regime, who's not going to say this is a massive rebuild or we're building up cap space, because cap space doesn't win championships, people, players, great coaching does, they could be meaningfully competitive ASAP. And you look at the history of our league from the Andy Reids, Bill Belichick won a Super Bowl in year 2 in New England. the turnarounds are quick and they're impactful when you have the right coach.
So, I mean, the next question I have here is, what do you make of the Giants job? I kind of get the vibe that you like the Giants job after what you just said there.
Yeah. You know, what's really sad is, like, I remember having meetings with the New York Giants when I was at the Jets about, all right, well, if we both have home championship games, do you guys go Sunday? Do we go Monday night? Like, it's the New York Giants. Like, Jordan, they're right. A great franchise. And it's sad to see where they are. And I do think it's a quick turnaround. And I think they should have their absolute pick of the best coaches and GM candidates out there, because it's the New York Giants.
Right. So let's go to that for a second. You mentioned, you know, the coaching side of it. Let's go for a second and say, if you're the GM there and you're hiring a coach, who do you look around the league and see as, okay, this guy is a guy I need to talk to?
Yeah, I'll give you a couple of names, because I will tell you this, Jordan. I was the assistant GM of the New York Jets for 5 years. When I became the GM, it took me about 18 months for the day to slow down. These are really, really hard jobs. And I will tell you, I made a ton of mistakes my first year and a half on the job. Now, fortunately, we were winning a lot of games and went to the playoffs, and I survived my mistakes. My point is, I still don't understand, if I owned a team, how incredibly important experience is. And I think you're probably a lot better at your job today than you were when you first got there. So why not benefit from other people's?
I fired Tom Coughlin in my first year and realized, and then he was back the next year. I realized, hey, maybe I shouldn't do that again.
Yeah, right. And Jordan, so I'm looking at Dan Quinn, Vance Joseph, Todd Bowles, Doug Peterson. Like, those guys have been successful to varying degrees. Some have been through Super Bowl, some have won a Super Bowl. Someone's going to have to tell me why you're not talking to Dan Quinn, Vance Joseph, who's done a great job, Todd Bowles, who did a much better job than people realize, the Jim Caldwells of the world, Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl. Someone's going to have to tell me why you're not talking to those guys over some young coach who may be a great red zone scheme diagrammer, or some guy that could draw up a blitz but has no idea what it's like to actually be a CEO. Especially in New York, when you're the head coach of the New York Giants, if you don't have rare mental toughness, they're going to have, you know, their fifth coach in 8 years. Like, if you don't have a rare human being that's done it, that's been battle tested, you're going to get the same result. And that's why their process to me, Jordan, is so important. You need to ask questions that reveal people's ability to lead, to manage, to hold people accountable. And if you don't have that, you have no chance.
So let me play devil's advocate for a second then, right? Why, you're mentioning all coaches who have experience. How would you get experience? And how would you then, you know, how would the next, I'm using, for example, Sean McVay, if you're not willing to take the opportunity and you're saying, okay, I want to look at guys mostly with experience.
Yeah. And I will tell you that Sean McVay is way better today than he was when he first got there. And I would push back on that, Jordan, and say, like, maybe Atlanta didn't make the right decision letting Dan Quinn go. Maybe Philly didn't make the right decision to let Doug Peterson go.
Right.
Has Detroit been better since Jim Caldwell has left that building? So you're presupposing that the reason those gentlemen, the decision to let those coaches go was the right one. And I would challenge that assumption.
Right. Okay. How much you think has changed in what teams look for now than maybe 10 years ago? I mean, there's obviously, I think, a more analytical approach, a progressive approach, that there's more data information available maybe than there was 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I think that, Tony Dungy said something really, really interesting that I thought had, like, tremendous wisdom, Jordan. He said, you know, there's more technology now than there's ever been. And yet coaches, and I'm stereotyping here, and this was Coach Dungy's observation, which I totally agree with. He's like, coaches work as hard, if not harder, than they ever have. We have more technology, and yet players are still players. They can only consume, you know, as much information as possible. So, my point is this, like, I think, you know, let me give you a great anecdote. Like, coaching to me is getting the most out of everybody on your roster. There was a player on the Jets. His name was Ahmed Carroll, Batman. He was a former first round pick of the Green Bay Packers. He was a corner from Arkansas who was really like a bust. And we got him at the Jets, and he was a backup special teams player. And one of the reasons he wasn't very good, Jordan, was he had a lot of pass interference calls. Mm-hmm. But one thing that Rex saw was he was a great blitzer. So he had this like Batman package. And I'm like, are you ever going to call that out of the game? He's like, you know, I'm not sure if we are, but you know what? If Ahmed Carroll knows that he has a blitz package, we're going to get unbelievable practice out of our 50th player. He's going to give us everything he's got. And that's great coaching. That's how you build a culture and a community. And a lot of people don't know this about Nick Saban. Nick Saban spends a lot of his time coaching his team, investing in his players, like getting to know his players in a very meaningful way. That, like, I don't know if you saw this the other night, but when Jameson Williams got hurt, mm-hmm. John Metchie went into the locker room to check on his teammate.
Yeah.
You know why that happens? Because Nick Saban has created a culture in this day and age of Instagram and TikTok and being selfish, Jordan, in a way that he wants John Metchie to crush it and make as much money as possible. But he's created an environment where John Metchie's in the locker room with his teammate instead of on the field. And the reason is he's invested a lot of time in getting to know his players in a very meaningful way.
You could tell that because it's really, Nick Saban's in a spot where, you know, not everyone's going to play for him and not, you know, even guys that go there, some guys aren't going to get the playing time maybe they want. Somehow Nick Saban is able to balance it where you can't find a player that has played for Nick Saban that doesn't like Nick Saban. And to be able to do that, it's a huge roster in college you must be really good at human personal relationships.
You know, and Jordan, I'll take it a step further. I've had the great privilege of going to see him at Alabama and sitting in on his staff meetings. There must be, and I'm making up the number now, in any one of those meetings, 6 to 10 former Alabama players that may want to get into coaching, may want to get into scouting. And like, it was so meaningful to me to see him do that. Like, I was so blown away that far away from anybody in the media, far away from anybody, you know, again, on social media, but those are meaningful relationships. And for all the great players he gets there, a lot of them never going to be NFL players. But why is he win every year? Because John Metchie cares about Jameson Williams. That's why. Or these guys that go to the staff meetings years after they're done, that's why Nick Saban's successful. And that's what the Giants need. They need somebody who is an excuse maker, who cares deeply about his players, that's going to build a culture that's sustainable.
How important is it for the Giants as an organization to let that GM come in, the new head coach that you're talking about, and have ownership sort of take a step back in a way? I mean, that's a big topic there. You know, there's family in the front office. John Mara is obviously very involved in the day-to-day. How important is that? And I'm sure you've dealt with this in Miami and the Jets, of letting the football people run the football and the ownership take care of the business.
Yeah. You know, I'm probably gonna give you a different answer than everybody else, Jordan, but like, okay, I'll just be candid. Like when I was at the Jets and the Dolphins, like I was like the exact opposite. I was really selfish. All I wanted to do was get it right. So my door was always open. Come on in. You guys got ideas? Let's go. Like, all I want to do is win. Like, there's a great expression. We're all robbing the same train. So we're going to work our asses off. You know, I had two signs up that I always cared about. Every rock, every day, we're going to be systematic, relentless to improve this roster from the top down or the bottom up. We may go try to sign a kid from Canada today. We may try to trade for Brett Favre, but we're going to work our asses off. And then the other one is, in God we trust, for everybody else, we need data. We are going to make sure that we are process driven and we are going to get as much good, actionable information. So if it's Chris Mara, John Mara, Mrs. Mara, I don't care. Come on in. Like, we're just trying to win. And we're going to have a great process that's transparent. And if you could help us get 1 inch better, come on in. If we're going to try to sign a kid from BC and you're a big donor at BC, you call the BC athletic trainer. And I want to know what kind of, you know, football character this guy has. So I think that is a real positive. Like, we have nothing to hide, but just hold me accountable for the results. Like, let me make the decisions. When we win, it's going to be great here. If it's not, you don't have to have the hard conversation. I'm going to be leaving on my own. So my record will ultimately judge me, but if you could help bring in the resources, let's go.
All right. So you'll have firsthand experience of this. Does it not put more pressure on you? Or I don't know about if pressure is the right word, but when the owner comes in and makes a suggestion, does it not hold more weight? And maybe, yeah, you know, sort of like a guilt thing if you decide to not take his advice on something?
Yeah. And I had hard conversations with Steve Ross, with Woody Johnson. And you got to understand, in this day and age, Jordan, the popularity of our sport, especially in New York, like, they're not going to have suggestions. Like, they love their teams, the Jets, the Giants, the Dolphins, in my situation. They're going to have ideas. And you have to be, Jordan, you have a boss. And if your boss says, hey, I think you should write a story on, you know, all the blown draft choices that Mike Tannenbaum has, like, you're going to have
usually
to
write that story.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot there. But the point is, if you don't want to write that story, you could say in a way that's, you know, respectful. And if John Mara walks in and says, hey, I think this quarterback at BC is really interesting, and you come back and say, well, I watched four games on him, we called the academic advisor, he's really a jackass, we're not going to sign him because he's inaccurate and he's an asshole, like, that's okay. But you can't not at least, you know, do the due diligence and go through the process. And I want every idea, because we're just trying to win. And if they have an idea, great. If I don't act on it, you're going to hold me accountable. You know, this is the old Bill Belichick. Like, if I'm 14-2 and a jackass, I'm not going anywhere. If I'm 1-15 and Mother Teresa, I'm going to get fired anyway. So just hold me accountable by my record.
Right. And it's a good point, because when it's true in probably all jobs, and, you know, you push back on your boss when you feel you need to. And like, that's, you know, it's your, you have to kind of walk that fine line. It's your decision of when you want to do it and when you feel you need to do it. So I guess that applies to football and, you know, dealing life with ownership as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, I've been at ESPN. They've been great. You know, there's sometimes they've asked me to do things that, you know, I may disagree with. And, you know, I've been in TV now for 10 minutes, so I'm an expert. Right. So, and it's so important, Jordan, like that. But it's like anything else. And I felt like, the guy that, to me, really, it's an art form, but like Dan Quinn, I saw it with Rex. Like, Rex had tremendous equity in relationships, so he could say really hard things to his players. Mm-hmm. And that's like the same thing. Like, the GM needs to say to John Mara, like, I really am fortunate to have this job and you believe in me, and we're not going to do this for whatever reason. And I know John Mara well enough. Like, he's not an unreasonable guy. Now, if you don't want to act on his suggestion, or if his brother Chris says something and you're going to hold me accountable, like, I'm going to listen, but I'm going to do what I think is best, because I'm going to pay the ultimate price that you're not. But there's a way you can say that doesn't fracture the relationship.
Yeah. And makes you realize how good a job Jerry Reese did to bridge all that for a long period of time and help the Giants get a couple champions. Ernie, of course, as well. I shouldn't leave him out also. Mike Tannenbaum dropping wisdom on us that I did not expect to hear, and a prediction that next year, look out for the Giants. Fans are going to like that one, Mike. They'll jump on board.
Well, it's just the truth. They have some really meaningful pieces, and if they get
gotta stay healthy.
Yeah. But you know, Jordan, if they just get average and consistent play at quarterback, they'll be in every game. And they got to make changes like every other team. Yeah. And to me, that starts on the offensive and defensive line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
But Jordan, the cupboard is not bare. And, you know, they said about Andy Reid, they knew Andy Reid was going to be special when he never once talked about excuses or the past or this or that. He was so confident in his approach that he was always talking about how and why they were going to be successful. And that's all he was fixated on. And the day he walked in the building, they knew they struck gold.
Well, we will see. The law of averages says it's about time for the Giants to have some good seasons. So hopefully we get there. Mike Tannenbaum, appreciate your time again.
Thanks, Jordan. Really appreciate it.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
All right, we'll wrap up here with a quick Jordan on the beat, and then we'll get out of here. We'll try and do this because it's a long episode. We'll try and do another episode early next week because a lot's going to be going on with this general manager search and then into the head coaching search. So we'll try and pump out episodes with a little more frequency going forward here. So with that being said, Jordan on the beat, this is the portion of the podcast where I tell you what it's like to cover the Giants, to cover the ESPN, or cover the NFL in general. I think I said cover the ESPN. I meant work for ESPN, or cover the NFL in general. So let me tell you how these kind of things go down. So I'm getting ready. My daughter needs indoor soccer shoes. My wife is working, and I'm about to go to Dick's, okay? So I get the two-year-old ready. You know, I get the shoes, the jackets on. My daughter's ready. I literally have my jacket on. We're right before I get to the garage, right? The door to open into the garage, I get a text. I forget the exact term it said, but basically it said he's out, meaning Judge is out, somebody. And I was like, oh, shoot. I yelled to my wife. I said, yo, look, I need you. I got to go. I start calling people, you know, who trying to get, because look, that's such a big story. I can't feel comfortable going off that from one person unless it's Joe Judge himself or John Mara. It's not Joe Judge and John Mara who are texting me at that point. And by the way, they're really never texting me at any point. But so I'm going and I'm saying to myself, oh God, he's fired. So I'm calling my, you know, people I work with. I'm like, let's get this confirmed by a second person. I'm calling other people I know who were in that loop or in that circle, you know, texting them real quick, seeing if I can confirm it. And I have my winter jacket on. I'm standing in my hallway. My kids are ready to walk out the door. I'm like, look, we can't go to Dick's. We'll have to do it another time. I finally get a second person to say, yep, just got told he's out. Then we go. I have to file to our news desk, then go to Twitter and get it out as quickly as possible. Now, I had it, like I had the tweet set up. But still, and the way these things work is I work for ESPN. So my job is not to get it out on Twitter first. It's to get it out to the news desk first. So I have to get out to the news desk, then to Twitter. Boom. Everything, you know, head starts exploding. Night gets thrown for a loop. Poor daughter doesn't get the indoor soccer sneakers on, what was it, Tuesday night, which we were hoping to. Went again on Wednesday. They didn't have anything in stock anyway, so we had to order online, if anybody cares, which I really doubt you do. But anyway, that's the conclusion of the story. So this is how the sausage is made, the behind the scenes of how news gets broken and how you have to go about confirming this is, you know, some people, maybe they would have went off the first one because look, that guy who sent me the first text was not going to lie, right? He wasn't going to lie. But you just want that second person when it's something this big, because you cannot be wrong. If I'm wrong on this, something I'll never live down professionally, right? Like if I get that wrong and say Joe Judge is fired when he's not, you can never be wrong on that. You can never take the chance of being wrong on that. That's a career killer. So with that being said, that's the end of this episode of Breaking Big Blue. As always, you can find me Instagram. You'd probably better than Twitter. Twitter, Facebook, not that reliable on Facebook. TikTok, email, definitely a good one. You can find me there. Send me questions because I'm going to do your best. I know everyone has a lot of questions right now. I'm going to do my best to answer them over the next few weeks. Like, subscribe, tell your friends. You're listening to Breaking Big Blue. I'm your host, Jordan Ronan. See you next time.